1230 WSOO with CCR looking out my back door. We were looking out the back door earlier, and it was snowing. Now it's stopped, and we have a CEO of War Memorial Hospital, David John, joining us. And, Dave, you said you saw some cars that came in from the west that were covered in snow, too, this morning, huh?
Yeah. It's that time of year, all that white stuff accumulating, but most of it melted this morning anyway.
It always seems like when it first happens, that's the worst part, because you know it's like you're in for the long haul. But you know, once it gets here, you know, and it's you're into winter, I guess, you know, it's fine. So, but
right,
it's just that first glance at snow, it's like, ugh, here it comes. So anyway, last month when we talked to you, you had said that you felt that the board there at War Memorial Hospital would be voting on the affiliation with Mid-Michigan Health, and that did happen last week. I know that you announced it to employees, and you did one public announcement about it last week, but we've been talking about it here for quite a while. But tell us a little bit about what that means now and how maybe this, you know, you kind of got this to this part of the finish line, but I know there's still some work ahead before it's all said and done.
Yeah, we, you know, we've been working on this for quite some time. I mean, probably the last 10 years we've been thinking about what are the benefits of joining a larger health system. And you know, in the beginning, you know, we were doing pretty well financially, and felt it was best just to stay independent. And as time went on, especially when we got to 2017 and 2018, when you know our finances weren't quite as good, that's when we decided to go out with an RFP and, you know, went through the process of whittling the number of potential health systems down to a couple. And then we went on a bunch of visits to find out which health system fit best with us. And that was decided Mid-Michigan. Since that time, you know, we've done our due diligence with both sides, basically uncovering anything that they might have questions with, and then you get into negotiating a definitive agreement. And once that is in process, you know, there's a bunch of confidentiality statements you have to sign where you aren't going to share anything. So, you know, I've heard a few complaints about, well, why did it just get shared at this time? Because that's when the agreement got signed and we could share it.
Right.
And, you know, there's still probably a couple months before anything may become official, because even though we've agreed to it, Mid-Michigan's agreed to it, there's a lot of state and federal agencies that have to approve it first, and they could not approve it. I don't think that will happen, but they could. But until we get those approvals, then it's not official. And then even once those approvals get done, it's probably going to be anywhere from a year to 3 years before everything gets completely implemented. So, yeah, there's a lot of exciting things for our community in that agreement. Just a couple of the highlights, you know, they're going to invest $60 million in capital projects at War Memorial over the next 10 years. They're paying off $21 million of our debt, so we'll have very little debt left. They've agreed to pay for half of a new electronic health record when we want to implement it. You know, that's probably a couple of years down the road. And they've guaranteed that no employees will lose their job, and no employees will have a reduction in pay or benefits. And also that the services we provide now will still be provided for at least the next 10 years, unless the local board, because of economic reasons or staffing reasons or whatever, feels they can't continue. And also we'll have an enhanced services for our community, because Mid-Michigan realizes they're not the closest tertiary care center to us, so in order to keep care within their system, they're going to have to bolster up the type of care that can be done in Sault Ste. Marie, so we don't have to transfer patients to Petoskey or Marquette or Traverse City to keep the care within the system. So that's a benefit. And then, you know, Mid-Michigan, excuse me, is part of the University of Michigan healthcare system, or what's called now Michigan Medicine. And right now, when we have a patient that needs quaternary care or fourth level care, we can never get a bed at University of Michigan Hospital just because they're always full. But now that we're part of their system, or will be part of their system, we'll have priority. So when the ER doc needs somebody to go to, Michigan Medicine, we'll be able to get them there because we'll have priority for that that admission or that bed. So and that's just scratching the surface of the benefits that we'll get from this. But those are the big ones that people usually want to hear about.
Talking to David John, CEO of Orr Memorial Hospital. Dave, you mentioned a $60 million investment over 10 years. What's that going to mean as far as is there specific projects or programs that are going to come out of that $60 million that you can share with us now? Or,
well, we haven't identified them yet. What we're doing is, we're doing our strategic process where we go through and say, what do we need, How is that from a population perspective? Is it going to be able to support itself in the future? So, we've already identified projects we'd like to do, like a new long-term care facility with a new food nutrition services department, a new materials management department, because those are all in the oldest part of the hospital. We'd like to turn all of our semi-private rooms into private rooms. We'd like to build a fourth OR, so we have more operating room space. All those things are in consideration, but we haven't identified which ones will be part of that $60 million yet.
It's almost like having a Christmas list, and like, I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and then it's like, well, what do you really need? So, right?
Right. Yep, exactly.
And as far as, this really seems like, having this affiliation now with Mid-Michigan Health will really bolster the hospital here locally, but regionally as well, I would think.
It will, and they just announced, Mid-Michigan did, probably the week before, that they now have an agreement with Mackinac Straits Hospital, and they're actually be a minority owner of Mackinac Straits Hospital. And then, they're also, doing some things with Helen Newberry Joy Hospital that it'd be really nice to see like an Eastern UP system where, you have Mackinac Straits, Helen Newberry Joy, and War Memorial all keeping care locally, mm-hmm. That they can do locally, but the higher-end specialty stuff that, can't be done in St. Ignace or Newberry, and we do here, hopefully, that would be coming here instead of going to Newberry or Marquette and Petoskey in the future, and that would benefit our community, benefit our hospital, and bring more people into the local area, so it'll benefit our businesses as well.
Will there be a name change with this, Dave?
There will be. And matter of fact, since since our negotiating has occurred with Mid-Michigan, they have developed a strategic plan to change their name, because Mid-Michigan doesn't work anymore.
Right.
When you have a hospital in St. Ignace, and you have a hospital in Sault Ste. Marie, and you have a hospital in Alpena. So they're close to announcing what their new name is going to be. But I would say if it was the old naming system, our name would change to Mid-Michigan Sault Ste. Marie. Mm-hmm. So whatever the new naming is going to be, it'll be whatever that name is, Sault Ste. Marie, just like they have Mid-Michigan Alpena, Mid-Michigan West Branch, Mid-Michigan Gratiot, that's how the naming would be.
What's been the initial reaction now that it's a done deal? Obviously, you said there's still the regulatory things that have to take place, but as far as the employees, the physicians, and the staff there at the hospital, what's been the initial reaction this moving forward?
Well, first, a lot of questions still, because, they don't know all the details yet, and, we won't know all the details till we, start working on it. But the majority have been positive. There's things locally that have to occur, too. We have a lease for the property from the county that will have to be modified to some degree. There's always the politics that goes into that, and hopefully that can be done without a hitch. But you know, if you're mid-Michigan and you're going to invest $60 million in the community, you want to have access for long enough to get your money back. And you know, currently, you know, I think we have 35 years left on the lease, and you know, they'd like to see, you know, 45 or 50 years on it. So we're working on that end as well. You know, one thing that from a history perspective, you know, we used to be a city hospital way back when, and then we turned into a county hospital, and it was probably back in the 40s or 50s when a federal act called the Hill-Burton Act came out, and it allowed hospitals that were governmental to get money from the federal government to improve their buildings, you know, build new buildings and whatever. And how you paid that back was you gave away charity care or care to people that didn't have insurance, and you could use that as your payment back to the federal government. So it was a great program because there's always people that don't have insurance or can't pay their bills. And, you know, we were able to get new buildings, money for new buildings, without ever really having to pay any cash back to the federal government. And then in 86, when we built the, we call it the new tower, but it's, you know, it's, what is it now, 35 years old or whatever, you know, the board wasn't getting reasonable rates as a county hospital for their borrowing, so they asked the county to go let them be a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, which happened back in 86, and ever since that time, you know, we've been an independent not-for-profit hospital. So the one thing I can tell everybody is that the taxpayers of Chippewa County have never put a dime into War Memorial Hospital. The land was there probably from the 1900s, and we pay rent on the land, but there's no taxpayers' dollars in here. But you always get in when, you know, somebody else comes in, and the building's on county property. Well, you know, they should be paying the county so much money for the hospital, and you know, that's not true, because the county hasn't put any money into it. It's always been the 501c3 that has put all the money into it. So we'll see how all those political things roll out, but I would think it would be smooth, because I would think people would see the benefits it's going to have to our community.
Right. And the hospital itself, you're kind of the space that you have, you don't have a lot of space to go out. I mean, you've kind of pushed the boundaries of that property that you've got there for the most part. Any expansion, how do you envision that happening?
Well, you would you know, we've bought a number of houses when they come up for sale around our property, and you know, we have the parking lots to the west and to the south of the hospital, and at some point, you know, they'll have to be buildings, like the older part of the building would probably have to be torn down, and you would have to build there or build in the parking lot. You know, it's like what they say in the strategic planning process. It's like one of those old games where, you know, way back when, before computers and cell phones, where you had to slide the different squares around to make a picture, and
right,
there's always one open square, because
yep,
otherwise you couldn't move any of the squares.
Sure.
And that's what they look at from strategic planning. Okay, where's our open space so we can, you know, do this project here, and then we can, once that's done, we can tear down this building, and then we'll have more open space. But obviously parking always comes into play to make sure there's enough parking. We're fortunate that the city parking structure is right next to the hospital, and it's nowhere near capacity at this point, so you know, we can always rely on that as well in the future. But yeah, it's one of those games where you move the different squares around to make space so you can do your projects.
How long before it's all said and done, and it's I mean, you said that there's still some regulatory stuff and obviously some other things that'll have to take place before it's a done deal, done. But how long are you projecting before that's all?
Well, you know, when you're dealing with the state and federal government, you never want to put a timeline together
that's
too
true.
Aggressive.
Right.
But we're saying early 2022. So does early mean January, or does early mean first quarter? And that'll depend on how quickly we get answers back. But I would think in that January through March area of next year.
Obviously, the community is going to have some questions and everything. How are you going to address any concerns or questions that the community has going forward?
Well, we're going to try to set up some town hall meetings where, you know, we'll be there. I'll be there, and then Diane Postler Slattery, who is the CEO of Mid Michigan, will be there, and we'll answer any questions that our community has. You know, our communication plan all along was, you know, we've been talking about it for a couple of years now. We keep our employees informed every month what's happening, and you know, our plan was, okay, you know, when this agreement gets signed, when it was, you know, it was signed last Monday, we'll tell our leaders on Wednesday. We'll tell our employees Wednesday afternoon. We'll tell the business leaders, our community, on Thursday, and then the press release will go out informing the media about it. So we wanted to make sure our board, our leaders, our employees, our physicians, and our business community knew about it first, which is why the plan was how it is. And now we're more than happy to set up town hall meetings and go out to our community and talk about the agreement.
Well, it's got to be an exciting time for you personally. I know you've been working on this, and the management staff there at the hospital's been working on this. What was it about Mid-Michigan that kind of, as I know you mentioned when we've talked before, you there were several different hospital or healthcare systems that you were looking at. What was it about Mid-Michigan that kind of said that this is the group that we would like to partner with?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. All the health systems we looked at were good healthcare systems. Mm-hmm. There, you know, it wasn't like they were substandard or anything. It was more about the culture and what the focus was on. And, you know, Mid-Michigan's focus was on the community. And one of the things that really, I guess, helped turn the corner was that Mid-Michigan affiliated with West Branch 3 years ago now. And, you know, West Branch had some financial difficulties. And, you know, 10 years before that, they had closed their OB department because the obstetrical department does not make money for a hospital. It's a community service. You know, Medicaid doesn't pay a lot for deliveries, that sort of thing. So when they affiliated with West Branch, Mid-Michigan could have said, hey, that decision was made 10 years ago. All the politics of that decision, all the back blow from the community, it's all been all ironed out already. We don't have to jump into that fray. But instead, you know, they went to the community and they said, okay, now that we're affiliated, what are some of the services that you think this community needs? And, you know, the number one thing that came out of those meetings was obstetrical services. You know, even though Midland is 50 miles away from West Branch, they still felt it was important for their community. So mm-hmm. just this year, Mid-Michigan hired three OBGYNs and opened up, you know, OB care at West Branch Hospital again. And that's not cheap, you know, hiring three OBGYNs and 24/7 staffing and that sort of thing. And even though they knew they were losing money, it was important to them to serve the community. So that was one of the big areas. So, you know, when people say, well, what services are they going to pull out of the community? They aren't. I would almost guarantee that they're going to add services to our area, which is, you know, what we want. And they aren't looking just at the bottom line of those services; they're looking at the impact it has on the community.
Well, and I know we've talked in the past too. I mean, the other thing is that, you know, is the shared expenses and everything. Where, you know, there's certain things that you can, you know, expenses, whether it's buying equipment or supplies or whatever, being a part of a bigger group and everything, you get a better price.
Oh, for sure. That's you know, that's part of it. You know, more than anything, I don't know that people realize how difficult it is and how much is on each department of our hospital when you have to do things alone from a leadership perspective. So, you know, our leaders, you know, don't have the support of a corporate office that when COVID hit and, you know, what policies they're going to be for their department and how it's going to work and whatever. You know, each department leader had to work on that and develop their own policies. And, you know, that all takes time. And when you're part of a system, you know, that all comes down from corporate. You have input on it, but the majority of the legwork is done by corporate so that our leaders can have more time to deal with the hands-on stuff that needs to happen. And so that's a big part of it too, when you know you have that support. And even from a physician standpoint, you know, we have some specialties here that are one physician specialties, like urology, you know, and endocrinology, and ENT. Well, you know, when these physicians need somebody to call for advice, you know, there isn't anybody. I mean, they can, you know, where they trained or some colleagues maybe they have or whatever, but it's so much easier when, you know, there might be, you know, five other ENTs down in Midland that our ENT can call and say, hey, I want to run this by you. You know, what do you think of this? And so, and even at the University of Michigan, you know, at Michigan Medicine, they have probably even way more than that, that they'll be part of the system, that there'll be a communication process, which should make things much easier and much quicker to get in place.
Yeah, I would imagine. And it seems to me that the turnaround there at War Memorial Hospital over the past few years, because you mentioned, you know, there were some pretty lean times there for War Memorial Hospital. And I remember that there was some concern in the community, you know, what's going to happen to the hospital when you guys were having some financial struggles. And for it to turn around the way it has been, and now to see this happen, I think the community should be nothing but excited about the future of healthcare delivery and services here in the Eastern Upper Peninsula, because I think I'm sure, and I don't know nearly as much as obviously that you do, but it's got to be just an exciting time there at the hospital to see this all come around.
Yeah, it definitely is, and you know, I just caution people to know that it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, you just don't turn on the light switch and everything's changed. In the one thing too about Mid-Michigan was they said, you know, in this transition they take the leader from War Memorial, whatever department is, let's say radiology, and the leader from Mid-Michigan radiology, and they sit down together and they make joint decisions on how this transition is going to go. And, you know there's going to be some things that get a little dicey at times with how we do things and how they do things. And and they've already said that, you know, if we do things better than their system does, that they will implement what we did for their whole system. So, you know, they just don't come in and dictate, well, you have to do it this way.
Right.
They look at how things are done, how we've done them for a long time, what's successful, and in what areas they can make improvements on that would help us. And, you know, that's the type of situation you want. You want joint decisions, joint leadership, so that, you know, we're heard and we can make sure we fight for what's best for our patients.
Yeah, and that perhaps another reason why that they rose to the top when you guys were going through your vetting process.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a lot of good health systems that we, you know, we talk to. I mean, Spectrum and Grand Rapids and Henry Ford and Munson and McLaren and UP Health System, they're all good health systems, but it just came down to we felt more comfortable with Mid-Michigan and the connections they had with the University of Michigan, and that's probably what made our decision fairly easy in the end.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this transition progresses as time goes by there, so it's an exciting time for sure. I wanted to switch gears a little bit, Dave, and unless you had anything else to add to that, before we move on to the COVID stuff, anything else you wanted to add about the Mid-Michigan agreement?
No, we're just looking forward to it, and you know, there's a lot of work ahead, but you know, we'll get her done as quickly as we can.
For sure. Since we talked last time, shifting gears now to COVID and everything, the deaths in the county have really gone up significantly. Can you give us an update on that?
Sure. Obviously, you know, October was a tough month. You know, we got up as high as 16 patients in the hospital with COVID, which was as high as it's been since last November, December, when I think our high was 23. Currently, we have 7 in the hospital, 2 in ICU and 5 on the medical floor. Obviously, what we're seeing with the people who are getting really sick and dying is people that are not vaccinated. When you look at that, and you know, we've always heard, well, it's, you know, it's no different than the flu. And so we went back and we analyzed our deaths at War Memorial Hospital over the last 4 years. And in 2018, we had like 70 deaths that occurred in War Memorial for any cause. And in 2019, I think it was 75. Last year, it was 120, and this year, it's looking like the trending at 130 or more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you use that logic that it's no different than the flu, where our deaths have gone up 30%, almost now this year, probably up 50% over what they were. So let's say everything else is the same. Our population base hasn't changed. The age of it may have changed a little, but we're definitely seeing the number of deaths go up, and it's caused by COVID. And like you said, last week alone, there were 5 deaths in Chippewa County from COVID, and now it's up to 52. For a long time, we had been down in the low 30s, but in the last few weeks, you know, we've added about 20 deaths, and you know, it's significant, and it's significant when you look at the people who are passing away. They're not old people. They're not all people that have underlying conditions. There's some in their 40s and some in their 50s, but the standard is that 99% of them are not vaccinated. You know, I continue to plead to people that don't listen to the politics of things. Listen to the data, and the data is clear. The vaccine is safe as any vaccine any of us have ever gotten in our lives. And without the vaccine, you are basically playing Russian roulette. And, you know, there's going to be one chamber of the gun that has a bullet in it, and you're going to pull the trigger, but you're not going to know which one has the bullet in it, and you could die from it. And, you know, yep, you can be big, strong, and tough and say, well, I've never been sick before in my life, and the flu's never impacted me that hard and whatever. But, boy, when you when you get to a point where you can't breathe unless you have high-flow oxygen pushing 15 liters, you know, a minute into your lungs, and that's never going to change, and you have your right mind, you're not unconscious, you can think, you can talk, you can do all the rest of that, but your lungs just aren't working anymore. That's a tough thing, and it wears on our staff. You know, our staff are getting burnt out. There's not enough staff to take care of people, and there's not any new staff coming in. And when they see people that may be here from a week to a month or more with COVID because they haven't been vaccinated, that really wears on the staff.
Yeah, and I know that we had somebody here at the radio station who was fully vaccinated, still got COVID and everything, and it was, you know, didn't have to go into the hospital, but was really had some struggles with it. And I said to him, I said, boy, can you imagine if you hadn't had the vaccine and everything? You know, I mean, he really feels that the vaccine was what kept him out of the hospital and perhaps kept him alive, because, I mean, because it was a rough go there for him for that 10 days that he was off, and he's still feeling the effects of it. But because I guess it's just such a horrible, disease or whatever that's out there, but it's, you know, the vaccine protected him from being in the hospital.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing. You know, there's plenty of breakthrough cases, and breakthrough means they broke through the vaccine. But, you know, even with the flu, regular flu, there's always people who've gotten the flu shots in the past that still have gotten the flu. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen. But what we're seeing is that when there is a breakthrough, they're not anywhere near as sick, a lot less chance of being hospitalized. And, you know, we've done a lot of the monoclonal antibody infusions for people who tested positive to keep them out of the hospital. I think last month we did 162. So imagine if we didn't have that out there, and these people, which a certain percentage of them would have gotten worse and would have had to been admitted to the hospital. It's great. You know, I tell people, if you were diagnosed with COVID and you're not feeling good, you know, you really need to look at getting that monoclonal antibody infusion, because it's going to help. There's people that say the very next day they're feeling 100% better. I think we've only had one person who had that infusion that actually had to be admitted after. So it can keep you out of the hospital, and it can keep you from dying. To meet the requirements, most everybody can meet the requirements of that. So it's not a big deal. If you're newly diagnosed, that's the key. You know, you can't get it once you're in the hospital, because then it's too late. You have to get it early.
What about vaccinations? I know that there's been are they now allowing younger kids to get vaccinated? Has that been approved now, and is that starting to happen?
Well, I heard that, you know, the I don't know if it was the FDA or the CDC approved vaccines for 5 to 12-year-olds, but we haven't seen anything yet on that. I know it's a lower dose of the vaccine.
Right.
I don't know if the one of those agencies has to fully approve it now for it to move through the process, but obviously when that happens, you know, I'm sure the local pharmacies and physician offices and others will be offering, the health department, tribal health centers will be offering it to the younger individuals. From a booster perspective, I think anybody who has been vaccinated for at least 6 months can get a booster right now. It's 65 and over who are getting the boosters, but it'll drop down to the younger ages here as well. And, you know, I think we had 696 of our 850 employees get fully vaccinated, and I think so far we've done about 200 boosters. So,
right.
You know, that's lagging a little bit, but you know, we are getting that out there and getting the boosters into people's arms.
Are you anticipating, Dave, that this is probably going to be like a flu shot where we're going to have to get a COVID shot every year for a while till this thing runs its course?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, you hope at some point they can combine the, you know, the regular flu and the COVID vaccine so you don't have to get two shots. But,
right.
You know, it's a coronavirus. The coronaviruses have been around for forever. You know, that's the flu and the common cold are based on coronavirus. So, yeah, I expect it to, and it's going to continue to mutate, and there's going to be different versions of it, which we've seen already and continue to see. So, you know, I think it's something we'll have to deal with for a long time.
I know we're dealing with the Delta variant right now, but I just heard last week in the news something called the Delta Plus variant, which I looked at my wife Sharon, and I'm saying, oh, great, now another variant. Delta Plus is bad. Delta's bad enough. I don't know. Delta Plus sounds even worse.
Right. Yeah, it seems to change every couple weeks, and you know, as they continue to test and look for the new variants, there's always ones that pop up. But the good news is, I think we're in position to deal with those new variants better than we were at the beginning of this pandemic. And obviously, the medical science behind it has improved. And you know, if we knew today what if we knew today or back then what we know today, I bet you our death total would have still been significant, but I would think in those first 3 months of the pandemic back in, you know, 2020, we would have saved a lot of lives with what we've learned since that time. But that's medicine. You know, there's new viruses and new diseases coming out all the time, and then, you know, the scientists have to figure out how we're going to combat them and how we're going to make it so that people can live with those viruses and not die, and that's part of the process.
Boy, and that seems so long ago when this whole thing started. It just seems like it's been like 100 years ago that we've been mm-hmm. dealing with this, but here we are heading into the new month. The other thing that's changed at War Memorial Hospital is you're back to doing testing, and you now have an agency that's kind of taken over the testing there on Nolte Street.
Right, and it was just stretching our resources too much with the staffing issues that we have. You know, to do that, we want to do it for our community, but we just didn't have the resources. So we've partnered with this company called HONU, HONU, and they are doing the testing line for us now. They're out there this morning in their little tents as the snow is flying, so it's not the best for them because they have to deal with the weather. But I've heard they've secured a building in town, and they will be bringing it indoors for the winter. But it'll be a place where people can come test. And you know, if it's the antigen test, you'll have your results within 30 minutes. If it's the PCR test, it's anywhere from 2 to 4 days. You know, we didn't have enough tests to be able to test for people traveling to Canada. They'll do that. You know, it's just, well, you know, I think the rule is you have to get your PCR test back within 72 hours because it has to be a negative within the last 72 hours to go to Canada. And so they'll have to work on that time frame a little bit, but it gives another option for the community to get tested if they think they have COVID, but also tested if they need it for travel.
Yeah, that's another thing. And here in just a couple, about a week or so, they're gonna, the border will be open and everything, and Canadians will be able to come over to the U.S. At least non-essential Canada. We've had Canadians that have been coming over as essential. You've had a lot of essential workers there at the hospital that come over from Canada on a daily basis, and there's others that come in through the community. But now, non-essential travel from Canada will be taking place starting next week. Any concern about that as far as you know, just kind of opening things up a little bit more and things maybe getting out of hand with that occurring?
No, I don't have any concerns with that. Actually, it's probably, it will be beneficial to just get people starting to move again. And, you know, we all know what our precautions are, what we need to do. So I don't think there'll be any problem. I think our rate over here is probably higher than what's been in, at least in Sioux, Ontario. So I don't see any problem with them, you know, bringing in a big spread of it back over into the U.S., especially when you're having to be tested and you know, the precautions are in place.
And it was about a year ago, David. You remember that it was the worst time for the hospital at that point. You know, when we really saw an uptick in cases and people getting admitted to the hospital. You've had that a couple times. That cycle has kind of happened a couple times at the hospital. But here we go into November. As we head into the holidays, are you worried about an uptick in cases there at the hospital and having to you know, open up more space for COVID patients because of maybe the holidays or people out of hunting camp or whatever?
Yeah, there's always a worry about that. You know, you're always concerned, but again, hopefully we're all a little smarter about it than we were last year at this time. You know, you know, if you look at the numbers from last year, we're not as many positive cases at this point at the 1st of November than we were last year. But it's always going to be a challenge. And you know, when I look at the vaccination rates, you know, we're 54.8% are fully vaccinated in the county. So that worries me, because if there's going to be travel, that means, you know, 45% of the people aren't fully protected from it. You know, probably the people that aren't vaccinated are probably the ones that aren't taking as many precautions as the people who are vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So you could see a spread, but at least, you know, in our older population, I think we're in the high 70s of people in the county that are 65 and over that are vaccinated. So that's a good thing, you know, and because those are usually the people that will get the sickest if they're not vaccinated. I think we're just going to have to understand that this is something we're going to live with, and there'll be people that choose to protect themselves well, and there'll be people that choose not to protect themselves. And you know, that'll always be concerning, but hopefully someday we'll beat this. And you know, like I say, I don't think life will ever be normal again, whatever normal used to be. You know, we'll always be dealing with potential pandemics, and it just shows you, you know, the response that we can have to something, you know, probably has to be quicker so that we lose less lives, but we still have to be cognizant of people who are spreading bad diseases that could impact each of us individually.
For sure. Anything else, Dave, you want to add before we let you go for the day?
No, I think that's pretty good. Just for the community, you know, we'll be trying to set up some town hall meetings in the next, you know, might not do it before Thanksgiving, so maybe, you know, the first part of December when we'll have a little better idea and when maybe all this stuff will be officially approved. But you'll have your opportunity to come to one of those to hear more information about the affiliation with Mid-Michigan.
For sure. And we'll obviously publicize that when those come out and everything, for sure. Well, we won't talk to you again until December, so happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the month, and we'll look forward to hearing some more about the affiliation with Mid-Michigan and hopefully some decreasing numbers here on COVID as we head into the holidays.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
All right. David John, CEO of War Memorial Hospital, joining us here on 1230 WSOO.